This is an interesting time, and I've been thinking a lot about the messaging that might be necessary for those thinking about AI and how to deliver it with their customers. And turns out, I'm not alone. Beate Chalette joins me to talk more about messaging, storytelling, and what it means in an AI world in this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. Are you struggling to hire top talent for your MSP? What if a team of senior technicians screened thousands of remote MSP candidates so you could review the best of them on video, only interviewing candidates you already like? Support Adventure handles your recruiting, HR, and onboarding needs, hiring only the best English-speaking talent from around the world. Make a remote team that works hard for you and fits your company's culture. Check out supportadventure.com/MSP radio to learn more. Beate, it's such a pleasure to have you on today.
Dave, I'm excited to be here.
All right, we got to do the background question to give everyone the piece. You've got a pretty cool story of going from being in debt, you know, over $100,000, to selling a business to Bill Gates, and I'm assuming Microsoft. But tell me more. Tell me a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, so it was actually Bill Gates himself. It was one of the companies he owned privately. And I sold a stock photography syndication, which was, interestingly enough, a technology-based business because it was all about digital assets and getting them to the right people. Originally, I'm from Germany. I am a photographer by trade. So I've always been in the creative arts, but always liked the business side of it much better. And so from being a photo editor at Elle Magazine in Germany to being a photographer rep in the United States, a production company, and then eventually a stock photography syndication, covered 10 years of just brutal hardship and adversity, fires, floods, riots, earthquake, a tsunami, September 11th, the lawsuit. I have covered it all. Now I added a pandemic and a hurricane to it too. So I think I'm a disaster-proof business owner by now.
And now you've been focusing a lot on growth strategies. Like, tell me a little bit about how that pivot worked out and what you're working on now.
Yeah, so what I've found is when I work with creative people, that there are a lot of people that I call visionaries, thought leaders, leaders, or people that are just unusual, that don't fit the regular mold. And that really interests me. And I find that people that oftentimes have these big ideas or complicated ideas, they don't know how to land the plane. And so I help people that have these ideas and they're like 50 puzzle pieces in their heads and they can't lasso them together. I crawl into their minds in a really kind of cool process. I lasso them in, and then I put them in a system, and then they can go out and sell it. And so I'm going to give you an example. I was working with a client in London who is a data scientist who wanted to develop a framework for ethical AI for search engines for luxury brands. I mean, it doesn't get any more specific than that. I would be lying to you, Dave, if I would tell you that I understood everything that she said. But what I was able to do is pick the pieces in the right order and help her to articulate it so she could sell it to somebody who didn't speak the language, because the decision makers don't often speak the language. She walked out a week later, she closed a $50,000 deal.
Okay, which is exactly sounds like our audience a lot, these typical MSPs, managed services providers, IT services companies, you know, the kinds of people that are highly technical, deep skill set, but often struggle on telling a good story. I mean, I smile and go, like, my superpower more than anything is not necessarily that I'm great technically. It's that I spin a good yarn. It's that I can tell a good story and I can convince people. How much are you seeing that disconnect, and what are people doing to get over it, particularly in technical fields?
I would say in technology that disconnect is probably higher than anywhere else. And I think that has to do with a lot of things, because people in technology typically have a higher IQ, or they're hired with a higher IQ specifically. And I have a company here in Los Angeles by the name of Cornerstone. And when I asked the CTO, what's his hiring process, he says, we hire on IQ. And I said, well, how is that working for you? He says, well, we have the smartest people. I said, no, how is that working for you? He says, the culture is a disaster. So the issue is that I think specifically in information technology, that there is a reward for being geeky or being super smart. and there's not enough emphasis on how to land these planes that are in your head so other people can understand it. And even more so, there is almost sometimes an arrogance around it where it says, well, I mean, you don't understand it. That proves that you're not as smart as I am. That might all be nice and good. But you can't sell like this because then other people say, I don't have any idea what you're talking about. This makes no sense to me. This may make sense to you. If you want to keep selling to yourself, go ahead. So we have to specifically in this moment in history, in time, in technology, that more people understand on how to use layman terms or reframe or spin a good yarn. This in such a way that somebody wants to buy it actually understands what their outcome is when they hire you.
All right. There's a lot I want to unpack out of what you just said. First off, tell me why you think it's so important, like right now. What's important about this particular moment?
So if I look at artificial intelligence and I see just, I mean, how fast it goes and how, you know, I just finished something that would have taken me 3-4 weeks to do in a day just by, you know, just pumping it in, giving the right prompts, boom, there it is. But I also know that there's a lot of bad guys or a lot of people that take shortcuts or people that are lying or people that don't know what the ethical way or what the consequence of an unethical way even is and how one small thing multiplies itself in a system over time if it is not done right. And then the problem just compounds itself to this astronomical issue that then is in every system in the company, you know, polluting every piece. Decisions are now being made on who stays, where the budget goes, where the ROI is, who gets fired, who stays by artificial intelligence. And so we are now giving all the power on the C-level because what does the C-level think about? Who can I get rid of? How many jobs can I replace by a machine so that I have higher profits? My shareholders make more money. I make more money. Screw everybody else. If you are now not taking your laptop and you walk in into these offices of these companies and say, if you screw this up, the world's going to be in really, really big trouble because machines don't go to dinner. Machines don't go on airplanes on vacations. Machines don't swim in Fiji in the ocean. Machines don't do any of this. So if we build a system that is by machines, four machines, who is going to run the economy? So then what? Then there's going to be people that own the machines and then there's going to be the machines and everybody else is dead. So what does that even mean? So I think this is the time where we have an obligation in technology to say, allow me to raise my hand. These are the good things. These are the questionable things. And this is really, really, really bad. So why don't we teach what we know that is not going to cause permanent damage? Why don't we keep it in check? And we've seen in the early experiments of how the machines started to talk, they developed their own language. If you are in this industry, if you're listening to this podcast, this is your moment, baby. I mean, literally, if I could get my hands on all of you and just give you a swift kick in the behind and say, no more thinking about this. Get your value proposition out, you know, nail the message, nail the unapologetic value proposition, go out there and help people not to screw this up for everybody.
Now, I want to ask, because I spend tons of time culling through the data, and anybody listening to the daily version of the show knows that there've been the research studies that are really digging into this are showing that some of the most effective uses of AI is not around replacing people, but augmenting people. That in fact, you know, that the idea of just replacing everybody with a machine actually ends up with lower levels of outcome, of positive outcomes. And that the best outcomes are actually not even empowering your best people with AI, but taking your B players and making them better. That actually is the best usage. So if that's what the data is telling us, what the research is telling us, kind of what scenarios are you most worried about here that these non-technologists are going to latch onto?
It's the cost savers. It's the budget cutters. It's the people that are driven by the profits first idea. When we were outsourcing to China, we were outsourcing to China at these large quantities, and we dismantled all these factories in the United States because we could do it somewhere else cheaper and faster. Not just did we hand over all of our secrets and technology to what we're still paying for, but we also got ourselves in a real crisis because we didn't have people that would be able to even afford to buy the cars that were done in the factories that were now no longer here. And then everybody goes like, oh, gee, I didn't see that coming. It is so fundamental to say, how could you not have thought about that? That's my point, is that the people that are in the know, like you, your podcast and who you reach, you need to speak up now, because a lot of times the people that are making the decisions are dumb and reckless.
Many of them are probably chuckling, because that's oftentimes how users in general are described. So you're sitting now with an owner of one of these IT organizations or a managed services provider. What are you telling them to focus on in terms of messaging to these customers? What would you tell them?
So the first thing I do is I say, let's do an exercise. Let's crawl into the minds of our potential customer. Let's understand really in depth what is going on in their head. So imagine I'm the CEO of a company, 500 people, right? So somebody walked into my office and said, John, you know, AI, here's a product. I'm going like, great. And then the guy does what I've trained my entire company to do. He says, if we use this, we can lay off 10 people. It's going to save us $250,000. Our KPIs are going to go up in the productivity department by 15%. So they're just regurgitating some sort of data that they're trained by the organization to come up with when they pitch. So if I'm now the provider for the solution, I need to know this. So when I reach out to the CEO, or I sit on them next to them in an airplane, I said, let me guess. A guy named John came in your office and he told you that he can, you know, tell you how to save 10 people, $250,000 and increase your productivity by 15%. Then he looked at me and says, like, how did you know that? Well, because I just crawled into your head, because I know this is what's happening. You industry experts, you know exactly what's happening and what's being said. And then you need to say, here's why that's a problem. What do you mean that's a problem? Well, when you do that without that, then the thing that you didn't want is going to become the thing in 6 months. And here's why. So you need to go in, and it's almost like you have to assume that they don't know, because they do not know. So you have to bridge the gap between what their assumption is, right? Their base knowledge, which is rudimentary at best, your expertise, and then you have to figure out how to bridge that language of what you know with what they know in such a way that they'll pay attention to it. That is the biggest piece of, that's the biggest problem I see in this industry, is because it is so difficult for people that do these complicated processes, because then they think they dumb it down. And I think that you need to just let go. It's not about dumbing it down. It is that they really, truly don't know. You have to be an educator first to help them to see what they don't know. Because if I don't know, I don't know. I may be dumb, I may be ignorant, but I'm not a subject matter expertise. That's why I'm hiring you. That's why I'm bringing you into my company. So be my subject matter expert, but not an arrogant prick, but a nice guy that explains it to me in such a way where I go, holy smoking mackerel, I had no idea.
So where's the line when you advise, you know, companies to think this way? Where's the line in terms of expertise, in terms of education versus over information? Because they hire you because you're the expert. There's a lot they don't need to know necessarily, but they obviously need to have enough understanding to make good decisions. How do you advise on that line?
I advise, it's very simple. Take a piece of paper, and I want you to put three lines on this piece of paper. And the first one is what the problem is that they see at the line on the other side, all the way on the other side, in the third column, you put in the solution that they want. That's the only two things you talk about. The piece in the middle, what you know and your solutions and how you do it, you do not get to talk about. All you refer to as my proprietary process will get you from the problem to the solution. That's it. That simple.
Well, I'm going to chuckle and go, listeners, that's what we call business outcomes. Been talking about that on the show a lot. It's measuring business outcomes. Now, let's go a little bit deeper there. Like, what's a good filter to think about as you're the person, you're the expert thinking about this? It seems simple. There's always a little bit more subtlety to that. What's the framing I need to keep in mind to make sure that I'm not too much in that middle bit?
I think the litmus test is the puzzled face.
Okay.
So when they start to frown their eyebrows and their eyes glaze over, then you probably have gone too far. That's why what we do is the solution is the signature growth system. So that's what I do. That's when people call me, when they go and they say, Beate, this all sounds really great, but I don't know how to do this. That's what I do. So I put it in a system. And then I say, okay, our transformational system takes you from a completely from a CEO who has a great vision for his company to a company that utilizes, you know, the new technology or is ready for the new technology in the best possible way. And our signature growth system has five steps. And in those five steps, step number one, we do a thorough analysis and a data conflict diagram or whatever you want to call it. You can throw some things in there that sound big, but that are not too complicated that people can understand. And then you say, in this first phase, this is where we do the analysis. In this phase, we do the evaluation, the needs evaluation of what it actually is that you're trying to achieve, because why buy something that you don't need? In the third one, we look at the capabilities of your team. We expose the holes, the needs, the wants, the desires. You know, we make sure people are on board, because your technology and change management is nothing if nobody does it. And then we are in phase number five. We do the implementation. And then when you have that, then you can go in and you can sit down with anybody and say, allow me to take our proprietary system and explain to you sort of what our process is. And then the CEO says, oh, we already did this. Then you say, great. So you're moving straight to phase two. So you only have four other phases left. So you're pre-selling your other phases already ahead of time. That's how you do it. And then it's easy, because then you go like, I, or we. You say, oh, our system. That's what our system does. Oh, it just works so good. It's not about you. Then you can scale your company, because then you have people that only do this, only do that. You have a diagnostic thing where they self-identify where they fall. You're pre-selling everything. I mean, it's magic.
Well, Beate, I suspect you've got some resources. Where can I point people if they're interested in learning a little bit more and getting access to some of those resources?
Yes. So number one, I want you, if your business is going in this sine wave and you don't know what your growth blocker is, go take the quiz at growthblockerquiz.com. I'll help you figure out with this quiz in 2 minutes what the number one business growth blocker is, and then what to do about removing it. And if you've heard something where you go, the woman is interesting, go ahead to uncoverysession.com, fill out an uncovery session. Make sure you mention this show so you get priority treatment. And then talk to a business growth advisor, and then we'll help you figure out if we can help you to solve some of this. And while we're at it, will you please go to wherever you pick up this show and give Dave a 5-star review, subscription, and leave a comment. Even if it's just a green little heart saying that you've listened to this entire episode, but it signals engagement. Engagement gets it higher up in the algorithm, and Dave can help more people and share it with one other person that needs to hear what we talked about today.
Well, this has been great having you on. And thank you for explaining to everybody how I make a living too. Beate, this has been great fun. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSP Radio or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit mspradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.